Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
G'day, Mike Hussey here, but you can call me Mr. Supercoach. KFC Supercoach BBL is back and there's 25 grand up for grabs. So what are you waiting for? Play today at supercoach.com.au.
T's and C's apply. New South Wales authorisation number TP/01005.
It's time to cast off on a new adventure. This is Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Good morning and welcome to Real Adventures from wherever you are listening right around Australia. Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood joining you this morning to talk all things fishing, boating and, of course, the great outdoors. Good morning to you, Redmond.
Good morning, Patrick. Great to be here as per usual. And we had a nice week during the week, didn't we?
We did. I tell you what, after a personal disappointing weekend the following week, getting back out in the boat finally and taking a few of the Geelong Cats boys out with a great mate, Chris Vasileski from Gone Fishing Charters, getting out onto the squid, onto the whiting. Just a great day on the boat. You forget how much and how therapeutic getting outside and fishing can be when you haven't done it for such a long period of time. So, God, it was good to get out. And Chris O looked after us very well, as he always does. And great news is, Redmond, for those fishing regionally in Victoria at the moment, that fishing charters are back on. Chris can accommodate up to seven people on his boat at the moment. So if you've got a crew that are ready to go, now's a great time to get out, chase some fish, enjoy each other's company. We had a great day simply because we lucked out on really good weather, Redmond. Had a bit of a tour around, went over to Sorrento and then, you know, went well on the whiting. And if Joel Selwood's catching fish, Aaron, then you know, things are okay. Anyone can do it.
Well, the very first time when I met you at that famous Queenscliff boat ramp when our bromance started, it was actually Scoot Salwood who was down there, not Joel, but it was the first time. And I witnessed the North Bank 650 hardtop getting its christening covered in squid ink that very first day. It'd have to be five plus years ago now. So it was a long time ago when you were net. It was a cracker watching you do that. But we got some beautiful squid over at Sorrento, which was good. We had to find that clear water because that swell has just been relentless down here in bottom end of Victoria. And we just can't get onto those big squid like we did last year and the years before around the Port Phillip Bay heads and whatnot. So we found that clear water, which is crucial, and got some beautiful squid. And like you said before, the whiting love that dirty water, and that's why they're fishing so, so well. So the boys got a great feed of fish. I'd like to would have liked to get some photos with the hawk with a few whiting, but whiting already looks small in my hands, so we won't get the hawk holding any fish anyway because it'll make them look like tadpoles.
They look like pilchards, don't they?
Hey, very good day. Got some good weather. Lucked out. Some good food on the barbie that Chris has on offer on that big boat of his. So if you do have a group, like you said, you're always going to have a good coffee because he loves his coffee machine on that boat in that big cabin of his.
Now, I want to talk about bridal rope. We spoke about it last weekend and we said we were going to continue our discussion on and we've had quite a few messages on our Real Adventures socials, and you can get in contact with us at Real Adventures on both Instagram, Facebook, and of course our Real Adventures app, which you can download for free. And a lot of it was, can you go into depth around bridling and how it works?
Yeah, we did. We did a little bit, touch base on it a little bit last week. So if you do want to listen to any of our shows, make sure you download the Real Adventures app. It's got all our podcasts, recipes, and plenty of other options on the app in itself. But the bridle rope's a pretty crucial thing to have on a boat, whether you're fishing offshore or in the bay, and even in tidal waters. Now, not often do I use it in tidal waters, to tell the honest truth, but it definitely does help at times. I tend to favor the conditions more rather than bridling the tide, but it's when you're snapper fishing or if you're fishing in the ocean where you can't control, your wind and tide on the day as much as you can in the bay. So in the lower half of the bay, I should say, in the tidal water. So if you're fishing on the snapper up at, say, Carrum, where a lot of people chase the snapper in the coming months, and you've got, say, a southwesterly wind coming from sort of Queenscliff to that Mornington area part, that Carrum area, and then if the tide's coming in and it's actually pulling towards, say, that Beau Morris, you're sort of sitting across. So the lines are going to be pulling to the left side of the boat, looking at the back towards the engine. So what the bridle does is the bridle actually allows you to pull yourself around by attaching a rope to the anchor and then letting some rope out at the front, creating that sort of triangular-shaped sort of, I guess, pattern from the boat to the rope in itself. And that actually directs you to the direction you need to follow with casting your baits out, in which way the tide's going to help you stop. It stops you from swinging, but it allows you to fish with wind and tide favoring the way that your boat wants to sit. So it allows you to fish more rods. It stops that swinging pattern a lot, because if you're just naturally swinging back and forward, your rods will pull across the bottom. Where if when you bridle and put it sideways, your boat only moves a small amount, but it's actually moving. It's not swinging around. It's just moving with the actual wind itself in a small direction.
And we spoke last week around snapper fishing using snapper racks and how beneficial they can be. They can also be the biggest nightmare of all time when that boat's swinging, because under the water, and you spoke about Braden, how good it can be, it can also be an absolute pain if you've got six rods where underneath there's a hurricane of pilchards and squid that are wrapping around themselves. This is why it's so important.
Yeah, you're spot on. And swinging around is, you don't always swing in the bay. I won't say bay. I'll say in non-tidal areas, you're always going to swing. You're naturally just going to swing. Now, it not only does it help you like spread the baits, like you said before, but it does stop the tangle. And the tangle is crucial when you are using braid, because when braid gets tangled, it's a pain in the backside. And I only use braid. As we know, I'm not a mono fan, especially for snapper. But I just want to put it out there just to be a bit mindful of when you do bridle up, you need to be a bit smart on the conditions that you're actually fishing in itself. It can be a little bit dangerous at times, probably more smaller boats than bigger boats. But if the conditions are, say, quite rough, so 15 knots plus, and you bridle up on, and you actually bridle up, so that bridle pulls your boat around with that triangular shape that I said, and you can pull yourself all the way around and virtually tie the back of the anchor, sorry, the back of your boat to the anchor, and that you can literally sit with the anchor out facing out the back. That's how far you can pull yourself out with a bridle. But the problem is, a lot of the time you're trying to sit side on to favor that tide, which all you need to do is favor it slightly to stop the swing, and it works well. But once you go side on, obviously waves are going to then hit you side on, Pat. So you've got to be smart of when you do it. Fish to the conditions that your boat can handle, and the boat and what you can handle in yourself with your comfort zone. But be mindful that if you do sit side on to the water, sitting side on can actually create waves to break over the side, which can cause obviously water coming in the boat and a few issues. So that's just a little disclaimer there, Pat. Just be a bit smarter if you're in rough conditions in your bridle. But if you're anything under that sort of 12 knots is going to be pretty comfortable, which a lot of people fish under that 15-knot weather period anyway, Pat.
Let's have a look around the country, Redmond. But before we get to that, Vic Rock Lobster, there's a new tagging program in place.
Yeah, there is. And we'll... I'm going to stick with what I said a few years ago when they first brought them out. I think it was the Silly Blue Tags was the first ones they brought out, Pat, that I got stuck into. But they're going to be replaced with digital tags. So you no longer need to actually possess and actually tag the rock lobster in itself. It's going to be a digital tag, and the details will be reported through the Go Fish app, which you'll be able to download on any of your phone. You need to register the intent to be active before heading out actually rock lobster fishing in itself. So you actually need to notify that when you're actually going to go, so they know how many rock lobster fishermen they're going to have out there, fish or women as well. And they can only be assigned to your account as well, those tags. So if you're for more information, head to the Victorian Fisheries website or their Facebook page, and you'll be able to find out more about it over the coming months as we get closer to that November 15th, 16th, when the crayfish season actually opens.
Let's take a look around the country. Whiting report for the week, Aaron?
Yeah, the whiting, out of control, to be honest with you. They're as good as I've ever caught them. And to tell you the truth, they are also a bit early. So the numbers weren't here this time last year that they are in now. And I don't know if that's got to do with the water clarity and the dirtiness, because that just sends them into a feeding frenzy. But this time last year, I was getting big calamari. So I reckon the water was clearer, Pat. So I reckon that's playing that bit of a role while the whiting are biting early. The water is still bloody cold. It's only 12.8 to maximum 13 degrees. Like, I had Finn, the little fella. I got home the other day, and I left some fish in the live bait tank for him to play with, as he does. And I don't know how he had his hands in there for 15 minutes playing with these fish, because I put my hand in there for 20 seconds. I nearly froze it, the poor kid. So it's literally that cold. So the snapper fishery in itself, yes, get ready, but be smart with that water temp. It's still that under 13 degrees. I am not chasing snapper yet. There was some beautiful fish caught during the week in Western Port, and we know we're going to get Gwayne on next week, because we know that Western Port will heat up before Port Phillip, and those shallow muddy waters will also, the mud will heat up, which on low tide, and when the water sits over it, it heats up quick. It's quite shallow at the top end of Western Port where the snapper will feed first. Clifton Springs, some fish come out of there, and they're the two places that I would be fishing first. Obviously, COVID restrictions permitting, but they're still a little bit away. I'm not going to call it till November when snapper season's here. I think you even had some reports of some big rainbow trout caught during the week, Pat.
Yeah, and I love this, Redmond, because Melbourne and Sydney are the two cities that have been hammered with COVID more than any other major city around the country. And at the moment, there's some phenomenal fish being caught out of Albert Park. Some great reports of 5 to 6 pound plus rainbow trout, and some approaching that magic 10 pound mark. We know Vic Fisheries do some great stocking programs through there. There's really good catch rates of yellow belly at the moment as well. Vinny's Fishing, who we follow on Instagram, has had some great captures of fish, you know, in that sort of 5 to 10 pound range. Fishing hard bodies and a few soft plastics as well. So he's had some great fish, and the reports just keep on coming, Aaron. And it's a great fishery for something that's literally at the doorstep of metropolitan Melbourne.
Something you and I might do in the coming months, weeks, Pat, I should say, before, we don't want it to get too hot, but the Goulburn River, I know you love your fly fishing, and we know they stocked it and whatnot, but some massive rainbow trout coming out of there. Like you said before, that 10-pound mark, it's coming in regularly, so well worth heading to the Goulburn River if you have access to that river in itself. In Tassie, the Derwent is producing some huge brown trout as well, with fish over the 6-pound mark coming in consistently, and just casting out little Rapala, little divers in that profile are working well, and also soft plastics. The Tama River, fishing really well with big browns up to 70 centimetres, which is also hitting that double figure mark, being 10-pound for weight as well. And Browns River is fishing really well for brim with vibes and soft plastics doing the damage there.
Heading to Western Australia, land-based fishing off Perth has seen some really nice whiting being caught. There's some really big swells at the moment, which makes things challenging. Fresh squid on a size 4 gamma worm hook is the go-to for these bigger fish. Some of the reef species as well, Aaron, fishing quite well. King George whiting to nearly 60 centimetres, as well as snook and pike. And the other, the Kununurra Barra, Aaron, the Barra Bash on the 23rd to the 26th. That's something that we're looking forward to.
Yeah, it is. So Rec West have actually sponsored the competition as well. We know Rec West is a awesome government initiative over in WA. And they have a prize for the biggest barramundi. And there's some great prizes going all around. There's a tinny that's valued at $13,000, even if you don't land a fish, Pat. So that's not for the biggest fish. That's even if you don't land a fish, just for your entry. So well worth sussing that out, because this Lake Kununurra is home to a lot of 1 meter plus barra. And that's thanks to a really well managed stocking program, which has seen more than 1 million fish released into that waterway since 2013. So there's a really good chance you're going to land that big trophy fish. So that's one to keep an eye on, Pat.
South Australia, once again, there's great reports from the York Peninsula producing whiting, pushing that 50 centimeter mark. If it's anything less than the sort of size of your arm, they sort of throw them back in. beautiful SA, Redmond.
90 centimetres if the hawk's arm.
Squid and pippy bait, the bait of choice. Fishing out of Marion Bay. There's been great numbers of nanogai, Aaron. So I want you to talk me through this, the best way to target those.
I was hoping you said the best way to cook them, because nanogai burgers are my bloody favourite. I'll tell you what, they are. They've got to be one of the nicest fish to eat. And I'm not a massive fish eater. I do like fish at times, but I reckon I can have my nanogai burgers any day of the week, to tell you the truth, because they're just a super clean eating fish. And they live on the reefs and that slightly deeper reefs. And the bycatch, I know South Australia with the snapper rule, but the bycatch of your snapper, your morwong, your schoolies, and your gumbos. And when I say bycatch, they are all bycatch of each other. So you can target all of those species and you've got a chance of catching
the same spot,
each species of fish in that same reefy area, sort of that 40 to 50 meters. So that's fishing really way out of Marion Bay. And if you're on the jetty down there at Marion Bay and you want to get some fresh bait or some fresh calamari to eat, and I ate calamari during the week, Pat, as well. And that's the first time in a long time I'm eating some calamari. I tell you what, I'm going to have to load you up with some, because I don't think there's much beats the calamari either, because that is sensational, eating a calamari pasta. But sorry, off topic there, the jetty's fishing really well for some really quality squid. And Whyalla have had a massive run of good-sized calamari also, with bag limit captures pretty much coming in with most boats. So really, really good to see for the South Australian fishermen.
Heading to New South Wales.
I'm going to steal this one, Pat, from the start, because this is – I'm sorry, I've got to take this. This is the first time in four decades that we've seen what's happened on the New South Wales coast here. And I don't know if you've seen some of the screenshots happen during the week. I'm gobsmacked how to even explain to you. I'm talking yellowfin tuna, excessive of 70 kilo, just jumping out of the water, yep. 100 meters from shore, from Jarvis Bay right down to Jaroa, we'll pronounce it like that. And a lot of the fish are between that sort of 15 to 70 kilo. So it's a big range size of fish, but there's bigger fish than 70. And sensational. I don't want to put a damper on it, because a lot of New South is in restrictions and whatnot, but I'm really hoping most people can get along there on the coast that fish close to this, because this is like a once in a lifetime scenario, Pat. Like this is insane. So, and I know before this that they hadn't seen this in decades to come before either. So this is insane for the yellowfin fishery. And when's it going to stop? You and I have been talking about yellowfin, it feels like, for 5.5 years now. So it's great to see with the yellowfin there.
Redman, we've got a massive show coming your way this morning. We're chatting with Sean Clancy from BLA a little later. We're talking some of the newest tech that they have to market, as well as the social club, up after the break.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Habgood.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. It's time for the Social Club. We take your questions from social media. We're giving away Real Brand gear every week for the best questions. The first one comes from Daniel. Hey, Red, I noticed on your Salt Guide videos that you do not tenderize your squid baits for whiting. Can you talk us through what you do?
Yeah, it's sort of a bit of in with the old, out with the old and in with the new, Patrick, that sort of technique, because I guarantee you, years ago, I used to tenderize my squid. I did. Like, I'm talking, early days. And then...
So talk us through that tenderizing process for those that don't know.
Yeah, meat mallet, you basically have, a lot of people have in their second or third drawer at home, Pat. Basically, you take it out fishing and don't tell the missus or your husband you're taking it out, because it comes back smelling no good. But you basically get your squid tube, and old Tony, who we have on, we haven't had him in the show ever, but you and I both fished with old Tony a few times, and he's a local fisherman fishing Queenscliff. He's an older sort of generation fisherman, and he's still now with all of the local Queenscliff guys. They are all tenderized their bait still, but they sit there with their hammer and they get their tube out and they're smacking it and basically getting it to nearly just before mashed potato. And they literally squish it onto the end of their hook and then they throw it out. And they soften it so soft for the whiting and that's what they used to do. And then I reckon, I'm not saying that I bloody changed the way, but at all, to be honest with you, but I don't know where it come from or where I started changing it. I can't remember when, but I all of a sudden just started using squid strips. And I honestly, like I said, I don't know why I started doing it. I don't even know who I learned it off or where I picked it up from. But I just ran 3-inch, or not even, probably 2.5-inch, 3-inch squid strips, probably only maybe just shy of a centimetre wide. And that's what I use for my squid these days. I do not tenderise it. I do not nothing. And it saves a hell of a lot of bashing around on your bait board when you just cut. You get your squid tube, you just go bang, 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 and you just keep cutting squid strips rather than smacking it every time that you tenderise a bait. Now, I still fish next to a few old-school fishermen, and they were banging it away. And then it was actually funny. During the week, old Ross, he said to me, a local fella, he was sitting next to me, and goes, the only way I can get a bite is when I tenderise the squid even more than usual. But they just suck the bait off. Meanwhile, I'm next to him with a nice squid strip, not tenderising the slightest, going one after the other. And what I reckon was happening was he was getting it too soft that it was just sucking the bait off literally the hook, and he was hooking the odd one or two. But you got to remember that those worms and whatnot that they eat, if you actually grab a worm or a bass yabby, they're actually not that soft. Like, they're actually not that soft. They're quite tough. So they do break easy, but so does a squid strip. So my theory is that the whiting comes up, the tide, it sees your squid strip like a worm or whatever it is. It comes up, sucks the whole thing in, and eats it. And 9 times out of 10, that your bait will come, if you miss a whiting, say your bait comes back, it'll have no teeth marks in it, Pat, where if it's a leather jacket or a toady or a crapfish, they just pick the teeth marks out of it. And it is crucial to only put your squid strip on at the tip of the squid strip. Otherwise, it'll spin in the tide and it will go to crap. So make sure, when I say the tip, I literally mean the tip, the very end, as close, without it pulling through, as close as you can get to the tip. So anyway, I hope that helped you out, Daniel, and you can get some whiting next time. The next question is from Joel. It is, Danger, have you got any trips for the off-season organized fishing-wise?
Well, we've spoken about this on Real Adventures before, Aaron, because we've been planning to go to Tasmania for the off season, which I'm in now, and your work can obviously change and be manipulated around it. Now, the trouble that we've all got at the moment is the restrictions between states. So we'd plan to go and fish Tassie and fish around the northern half of Tasmania, but at the moment that just doesn't seem like it's going to be possible to do. So what Aaron and I are both looking at the moment is probably a few trips at some stage to East Gippsland. Clearly, it really is one of the prime game fishing destinations in Victoria, with the ability to fish for tuna, but also swordfish, one of those iconic fish that all anglers would have on their bucket list. So that's been on our sort of radar for a while now, Joel. And the other one is heading even further east. As that water starts to warm up, and Aaron and Gwayne, and we've got Gwayne on the show next week, and we'll ask him around the water temperature changes and what that means for kingfish pushing down from the east coast of Australia. But that East Gippsland region will be the first to see decent captures of kingfish as that current starts to warm up. So that's something that both Aaron and I are really keen to do. The challenge, as I said, is just getting access to it and not knowing when things can shut very quickly, because 2 years ago we were talking about how important it was to look after those rural communities that had been affected by fires, and that's very much been forgotten about. It just how horrific that was to those local communities, and then all of a sudden they're smacked by COVID as well. So Aaron and I are both keen to get there.
I want to catch a meter flatty, Pat. Can you help me out with that in the next few months? One meter.
Lake Tyres is the place for us to do that, I think.
Let's do it.
Gippy, really well renowned for great flathead, but Lake Tyres in that region, it is about as good as it gets. That wraps up our social club. Good on you, Joel. You're the winner this week. Send us a direct message and we'll get some Real Brand gear out to you. If you want to join in the conversation, then head to our Real Adventures social pages, or better yet, download our Real Adventures app.
Gearing up for Dometic. Enjoy the great outdoors with all the comforts of home with Dometic.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. It's time for Gearing Up for Dometic. Enjoy the great outdoors with all the comforts of home with Dometic. Our special guest this morning is Sean Clancy from BLA Lifestyle. Good morning, Sean.
How are you, Pat? Good to be on the show again. Hey, Red.
G'day, Sean. We always love having you on, Sean, because we always talk technology, and when it comes to the boating and marine space, you cover it all. This morning, I'm really keen, though, to talk about – I've got a 15.5-foot Staby, Aaron. I often talk about it on the show.
Yep.
And one of the big challenges, Sean, that I've had over the past sort of 3 years when I first put my Mincota on was where I put the batteries and how heavy they were. 60 kilos at the front of a 15.5-foot tinny. It destroyed the performance. But in one of the – certainly something that I'm excited about – can you talk to us about BLA's lithium batteries, which are going to be a serious game changer for weight distribution for smaller hulls and just the technology that's in these batteries?
Yeah, so it was one of the big things that, and even from an OEM boat builder point of view, they understood the market. They understood that anglers wanted to be able to spot lock offshore, not have to use a traditional anchor, and not be restricted by depth. You can spot lock in any depth you like. With that comes responsibilities as a boat builder to enable the correct amount of buoyancy for the weight and everything. So all of a sudden, if they spec their boat to carry so much cargo, so many passengers, and then the market starts desiring a Mincota on the front, then they've got to add the weight of the Mincota into the calculations as well as the weight of the batteries. And in the case of 36-volt battery for the bigger boats, you're talking probably 85 kilos of battery plus a 30-odd kilo motor. So in some cases, they had to actually reduce the passenger by one in order to meet their flotation buoyancy regulations. So it was a big concern. So what we decided to do is start to look at the lithium avenue to try and overcome some of those challenges, not only for the OEMs, but for the general consumer. In your case, you have a 24-volt Mincota. Like you said, 50, 60 kilos of batteries. Lithium, you could reduce that quite substantially. So in the case of a 24-volt battery, we can come up with a 50-amp-hour lithium weighs 12 kilos.
What about time with that, Sean? So obviously, Pat needs, you don't want it to last 5 minutes on the battery time that you've got when you're out fishing. You want to get most of your day out. How will the lithium battery go with the time compared to the actual, say, 60 kilos of batteries that Pat's got in his boat?
Yeah, so an AGM has a bit of a performance curve. So when it's fully charged, it's delivering full performance. As the charge reduces, the actual performance curve drops away. So if you've got an 80 amp hour battery, for instance, or 100 amp hour battery, it's probably only useful for about 60, 70% of that actual rating before it falls away and you can no longer hold ground and things like that. With lithium, and as you'd know from your power drills and other things, it goes flat out and then it just stops. There's no sort of drop away of that performance. So that's one of the benefits of lithium. So therefore, you can run a smaller lithium battery and it has the equivalency. So say a 50 amp hour lithium would be equivalent to about an 80 amp hour AGM. And you're keeping that full performance till it just falls off the cliff and then you recharge it. So then we can get away with smaller amp hour. The other good thing about the batteries we developed was we've got an app. So we've actually got a Bluetooth app that gives us all the information about the battery. So all of a sudden you can look on the app, see how much percentage of charge you've got left. When you're on spot lock, you can see how many amps it's drawing. There's a little indicator that says you're drawing at the moment 8 amps or 10 amps or 20 amps. We did a few calculations with that, and at 50% thrust, it's only drawing 8 amps. So a 50 amp hour battery, you're going to get 6 hours on spot lock. Now, that's for most recreational anglers, that's a big day out because that's literally on spot lock. That's not driving out to the area, going from spot to spot and everything else you do. Most anglers are probably productively fishing for maybe 4, and that's a healthy day out in the water for them. There's obviously bigger. We've got 50 amp hour, 100 amp hour, 150 amp hour. So we do cater for guy that wants to be out there for 12, 14 hours. But the reality is It's not really necessary in all those cases.
Talking and speaking of realities, the reality is for most anglers, Sean, that they can't get out in the boat all the time. And this has happened to me far more than I would care to admit.
But I know where this is going.
The discharge rates for these lithium batteries is a real game changer for recreational anglers that actually don't get to fish all that often. But when they do, it's been sitting in the shed for 6 months. They get down to the ramp and then all of a sudden they can't start their motor because the battery's gone flat because you haven't been out for so long. This is changing significantly as well with BLA's lithium batteries.
Yeah, so one of the other benefits of lithium is it doesn't discharge when it's sitting idle like an AGM, a traditional battery, will do. So, again, you can walk out to your garage, look on your app, and you can see, oh, I'm at 78%. I might just top it up. But it's not going to die. You know, these batteries, we've got a seven-year warranty on these batteries, and we actually there's no reason why they shouldn't last 20 years. That's the sort of the difference. And obviously there's a cost involved in the initial investment, but it just changes the whole way you go about it from then on. So
we've seen, Sean, over the past 5 years, and no one would know this better than you, given the offering that BLA has, but people are continually asking for more from their boats, more technology, more put into their standard runabout than they ever have before. Most of the big boat builders that we've had on are continually amazed by the upspec of their maxi trailable boats that are now not nudging but well exceeding the $250,000-$300,000 mark. Has that been a significant change, an extraordinary change for you, just with the demand for greater technology on smaller boats, where people are just happy to pay for ease of functionality and that great tech?
I think so. And when I was young growing up, we used to go to Bermagui all the time, and you'd see the guys that were at the, you know, had all the money and, you know, wealthy guys, they'd have the 40-foot boat moored in the marina, and that was the holy grail, was to have the Flybridge boat. And then everyone else was trailering their boats up with their HQs up the highway. I don't know how they ever did it, but they, you know, managed to drive these old these boats up the highway. What I think's evolved over the years is guys, especially in Australia, guys have gone, you know what, I don't want to be stuck in one marina. The fish are in different areas at different times of year, so I want to be able to move around. I've got $300,000 to spend. I want the best trailer boat money can buy. Obviously, trailers have got better. Cars have got more capable. So it's quite feasible for a guy to spend $200,000-$300,000 on a boat and therefore want all the tech that he can put on it, from electronics, electric motors, everything on it, and he wants the best digital switching and all that sort of stuff as well.
With that, it ties perfectly into sounding technology. Let's talk Humminbird and the LiveScope technology that you have that is just going from strength to strength.
Yeah, so Humminbird's sort of been around the imaging space. So traditional sonar, moved on from that traditional sonar to side imaging and then down imaging and then Mega 360, which shows you everything all around the boat. And one of the things recently that's evolved in this space is live sonar. And basically it's the technical term's multi-beam sonar, but basically what it enables you to do is see fish swimming around. And what that enables you to do as an angler is see how the fish is reacting to your lure or bait. It's not so much about looking for structure. There's other technologies for that, but it gives you the ability for, anglers to see how the fish is reacting to their lure. So you can see the fish, cast your lure, see the lure, see the reaction. If it's not reacting or it's turning away, then you can make another decision on lures and that sort of stuff. So that's kind of where the sonar technology market's going to evolve into, this live Sonar, where you know, we've just released Mega Live, and we put up a post of a barra just swimming through the screen the other day, and it just went global. There's like 300,000 people have watched it and all that sort of stuff. So it's pretty exciting for an angler, and even the cod fishermen are probably the ones that have embraced it the most, because cod, that old nickname is a fish of 1,000 casts. It's actually changed now. So cod anglers are going to areas like Lake Eildon, and they're just driving around looking for solitary cod. And they've actually really worked out a lot more about the cod by doing this, because it was always sort of cast at snags all day, work along the bank, cast at snags. What they found more recently is the big cod, when they're actually ready to feed, they go out into open water and just swim around. And they're quite often solitary fish too. So they'll be just one big cod on its own, swimming around looking for something. And this technology is enabling anglers to target that one fish, point the live transducer at it, and literally follow that fish and make the one cast. So it's almost more of a hunting thing. You're spotlighting a fish and you're hunting for that fish instead of just throwing casts all day hoping. Yeah, especially from a Murray cod point of view, it's become pretty amazing what's going on out there with this new Mega Live technology.
I know you've spent time fishing with him, and he's a great friend of Real Adventures. But if Hummingbird can survive Bomber Farrell in Groote Island and the fishing that he does up there, it's safe to say that it can survive anywhere.
Yeah, I was having a chat to Bomber the other day, actually. They say the water's more salty up there. We've actually tested that, and it's not true. It's same salinity everywhere, but for some reason, if something can survive Darwin or the top end, it can survive anywhere in the world.
Hey, Sean, with the live imaging that you were just talking about, now I've used the technology quite a bit in, say, Port Phillip Bay, and I found it real helpful with live bait, actually finding live bait in itself. Now, I understand the slower you go regarding any, transducer that mirrors the image on your screen, the slower you go, the better the picture is. Now, with the live imaging, how's it going to go with speed? Now, you said before with chasing your Murray cod, with your scan, how's it going to go with speed-wise? Like, how fast are you going to go to have clear imaging on your screens?
It's really a stationary technology or a Minn Kota electric motor moving around slowly sort of technology. It's not something where a saltwater guy will be up on plane driving around using live. The transducers themselves, most of the guys have got them mounted on a pole. So you put the pole in the water and you start looking around. So it might evolve into that someday, but it's really, we still rely on traditional 2D sonar really for anything up on plane.
Yep.
Moving quickly. Once you come off the plane, we use technologies more like side imaging, still use traditional sonar and side imaging. And then once you've sort of honed in on an area, you've seen some fish, then you'd use the live. I'm really excited to see it from a snapper fishing point of view. You know, when guys commit to anchor, they'll put a live transducer down and just see how snapper are reacting to their bait, whether the snapper have moved. And I don't know whether you've played around with that, just sweeping your live transducer around to see, oh, the snapper, they're moved over there. Throw a bait out, see if the snapper are rising up to that bait or they're ignoring it, what they're doing, and being able to make adjustments accordingly.
Bloody fast, what we can do now. The fish have nearly got no chance, Patrick.
Sean, before we let you go, one last thing I want to talk about, because we could talk technology with you all day, but phones are continually becoming more and more a part of our fishing lives. ScanStrut's another product that BLA offers. Great quality componentry, wireless charging. Just talk to us quickly about ScanStrut.
Yeah, so probably the favourite product that they do in the range is the wireless active phone charger. Our mate Paul Worsling loves it. He thinks it's the best thing on his boat. It's really just a wireless charger. You put it in. It's nice and easy to fit your phone to, and it just starts charging wirelessly. I think every boat should have one. Clearly, the boat salesmen aren't doing a good enough job.
I actually agree with you. I used it on Paul's little center console a little while ago, and I think I even used one on a Haynes Signature a friend of mine had. They're bloody tremendous. They are literally the best thing to put in a boat that I've seen.
Yeah, they're pretty cool, and everyone that's got one, it just becomes the favorite thing on their boat. And you know, guys are running; they could be running fishing apps now. You know, our BLA battery app, and they're running their stereo, all their music through their phones. And there's nothing worse than taking out your household phone cable charger.
That's exactly what I was just about to say.
Burnt out in literally months in salt water. So to have a waterproof wireless phone cradle and charger just solves all those problems.
I took my charger out literally during the week. I never take a charger out in the boat. It was in the afternoon. I went fishing. I'd been on my phone throughout the day. I literally took it out of my car at the ramp and I put it back in that afternoon. I don't even reckon I had salt water touch it and it was still stuffed. So it's literally flicking in and out now. It's a pain in the backside of it. Yep. I agree. Sean.
Straight away.
Sean, we appreciate your time this morning. If anyone wants more information around the BLA product offering, you can head to bla.com.au for more information. It's a great way to spend plenty of money because it is an addictive site. Aaron and I can both vouch for that. Sean, thanks for your time.
Good on you guys. Thanks for your time.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. It's time for Red Sit. Redman, what do you have for us for the weekend?
So we're going to next week talk a little bit more in depth at the start of the show about these squid that are just about to drop. We've been touching base throughout it, but we're going to do a bit more of a description going through basically how to rig your baits, how to run sinkers with them, how to find the eggs properly, sunglasses. We're going to cover it all next week, Pat. That's what we're going to do next week because it's not far away for it to kicking off red hot. But I just had a few social media questions coming through during the week about jigs versus baited jigs, I should say. And I just want to go through a few baits that you need to stock up on for your ideal situation to land some of these big squid. Now, your salmon length is, juvenile salmon length is 21 centimeters. That's the minimum length that you can keep a salmon. So if you can somehow find some small juvenile salmon around that 22 to 25 centimeters, they are great baits to use for big squid, as well as Tommy Ruffs. Now, Tommy Ruffs look very similar to salmon, but they're different and they don't have a minimum size. So keeping as many and by catch for whiting and whatnot, you're going to get a lot of them. So start to freeze them individually in just small. I think for 90 cents, you can get a pack of 50 bags, large bags from Woolworths. So that's what I freeze them in. I don't cry vac them. I just put them in those. But also as a, if you are heading out, don't forget silver whiting. If you can't get fresh bait, silver whiting from the petrol station or your bait store will work really well too. But the problem is their guts get a bit soft naturally from when you buy them. Just from the freezer and whatnot. So your three baits that I would be recommending are those, your salmon, Tommy Ruff, and your silver whiting. And next week, I'm going to go in depth with a few others, but so make sure you do tune in next week. But at the moment, if you can catch those, don't just throw them away. Keep them in the boat because it's going to be a red hot squid season once this water clears up in the next coming weeks. And that was Red Tip. Now it's time for the flying gaff, Patrick.
It is time for flying gaff, Redman. And, I love Sydney ciders. They're an inventive lot. And given the restrictions that COVID has in place around haircuts and how you're not able to have a haircut, Redman, the gaff this week goes to a Sydney cider that was caught handing out haircuts whilst fishing on a beach. Now, you can fish, but you can't get your haircut. So what this guy decided to do was mix both of them together. So whilst he was fishing, he was also giving a haircut. And I love the ingenuity of him. I'm not sure what Gladsy could say about that because he was fishing. He was doing what you're legally allowed to do. And then he just got out the, I don't think it was the bait knife to cut the hair with. I think it was something slightly sharper, but well played.
I'm impressed with it. It's He's made things work. Let's put it that way.
Thanks for your company this morning on Real Adventures. We hope you enjoy the show. We'll see you next week.
Want to witness the world's biggest football game? Head to iCanWin.com.au, predict Australia's score with a crystal ball, and it could be you and a friend at the FIFA World Cup Qatar 2022 semi-finals, all thanks to McDonald's. Maccas, together and loving it. TNCs apply.